WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
People are taking to the street. Listen. That's near the Plaza Bacadeño in Chile, just one of several countries and places around the world in the past few months to experience tumultuous protests. Maybe you heard a headline about a hike in the subway fare triggering this in that country. Here are a few other places. You know about Hong Kong. That may be in a category by itself, but also Iraq, Lebanon, Ecuador, we've talked about that one on this show, Haiti, Spain, the list goes on. So why have so many people decided to amass and to picket and protest right now? And do these different moments have anything to do with each other and anything to do with the populist and protest movements on left or right in this country? Here to help us understand are NBC News international correspondent Cal Perry, just back from Beirut, and BBC News South America producer Luciani Gomez, who's been covering the Chilean protests. She joins us today from Sao Paulo, Brazil. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Cal, start with the big picture, global perspective. How widespread are global protests right now, and how unusual is that?
Listen, there's definitely something happening around the world. It's being led by a younger generation of people. And you can draw connections between all of these protests. I think, you know, the younger generation is the obvious one. But in places like Iraq, in places like Lebanon, in places like Chile, you had divisive history, sometimes a very violent divisive history. In the case of Iraq, two wars in the last, 13 years since Saddam Hussein was executed by U.S. forces, an occupation led by U.S. forces, and then a war against ISIS. And so there's this unifying factor to these protests. You know, Lebanon, a very politically divisive place, bloody civil war. People have united under the Lebanese flag, and there's something beautiful about that. In Lebanon, certainly, where it hasn't been violent, there's something beautiful. In Iraq, we've seen violence from the government, which does not want to cede power, and sort of similar situation in Chile.
Luciani, tell us about Chile. What's going on?
So Chile Despertó is the main thing that protesters there were singing. It symbolizes well what they want. They want change in the system and the way things have been going for the past 30 years since the country ended the dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet. And despite being one of the richest countries in South America, inequality has been huge in Chile. So protesters basically want to change a market-driven economic model that has privatized pensions, health, and education. And they now are trying to get the government to change the constitution that was written still at the time of the dictatorship and is seen as the origin of all these inequalities and the origin of this system that they don't agree with anymore.
Now, listeners, immigrants from anywhere, help us report this story. Are you living in right now, if maybe you're listening abroad or originally from or just know people in a country currently being rocked by demonstrations? Help us report this story and tell us what you know, tell us what you've seen or are being told, and what you think it means in global perspective, in global context, and in the context of the United States, which is in such tumult ourselves. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-WNYC. 9692 for Cal Perry, who covers the world for NBC News, and Luciana Gomez, who's covering the Chilean protests for the BBC, 212-433-9692. Cal, I know you're in just Beirut. We have a clip from one of your interviews there.
I'm here to change the situation in Lebanon, the corruption of the government, for a better future for us and for our children and for parents and for every Lebanese that lives in Lebanon.
So tell us more about Lebanon.
You know, there's a joke. People say the number one export in Lebanon is, unfortunately, people, right? Lebanon has a vibrant expat community here in the United States.
Right.
But when you talk to people in Beirut, they'd say, look, I prefer that my husband be able to work here in Beirut and support our family. You know, why is none of the tourism money making it to everyday Lebanese? In Iraq, you have an economy where $200 million a day could be coming in from oil revenue, and it's just not making it to people. There is this income gap. There is a gap between people who are doing the work and getting paid for it. And, you know, look, not to put too fine a point on it, but you've been making this point for a long, long time. It's starting to seep into the U.S. elections, right? We're starting to have that conversation. In this country. And I would argue in places around the world where democracy has failed, and we've talked about this in the past, you give rise to some of these more extremist movements. And that's something the U.S. has to be concerned about.
Luciani, am I right that this started, and not to give New Yorkers any ideas, but this was triggered by a subway fare hike?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's how it started on October 7th. Students called for widespread protest. They called this evade, a fare evasion. They were suggesting a fare evasion, so basically just jumping over the barriers that controlled the entrance to the subways. But then it soon escalated to confrontations with police, and then it expanded. It grew towards marches, and then there was a big march on October 18, and hasn't stopped since then. But as I was saying before, it was just the fare increase was just the trigger to complain about much wider issues of Chilean society.
And would you put this in a broader Latin American context of any kind, or do we need to see it country by country?
No, it's definitely I think there's a pattern in the region. It's a pattern of frustration and distrust towards the system and the political class, towards corruption. It's also there's also a lot to do with the end of a high price, high commodity price cycle, and with that the arrival of austerity measures and economic downturn, and people thinking what's going to happen now. So fare increases are a common trigger here. We've seen this in Brazil in 2013, for example, and it was also in Ecuador a similar thing. So Chile has protested about education and pension reform in other years, but I think the fare increase have been a common trigger here to complain about much wider society problems and economic problems of these countries.
And before we go to some of our callers who have stories relating to different countries, I wonder how you each think this relates to the political shocks that we've seen in this country around the election of Donald Trump. Cal?
Yeah, well, and I think it's in all these places, it's basic services, right, including in this country. Look at what's happening, and I will always argue that climate is a great equalizer. Look at what's happening in California, right? And people are struggling to get power now because the power companies are feeling vulnerable and they're feeling like they're responsible for some of these fires, and you have this conundrum, right? Think about what New Yorkers put up with the subway. Come on, we love our subway, but it barely functions, and we're okay with that. When the basic services start breaking down, whether it's healthcare, whether it's transportation, and that's what you're seeing across the Middle East. You're seeing these economies just break down. The rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, and so people are taking to the streets, and they're realizing that they have a power. In Lebanon, they've been able to make the government resign. They've been able to stop things. Same in Iraq.
Luciani, same thing in Chile. It's almost like there's global inequality through globalization of the economy and other factors that people are just fed up with all over the world, and sometimes it gets expressed with politics on the left, sometimes through politics on the right.
Exactly. I think here it's also been a pattern of right against left. So in the case of Chile, there's a right-wing president that the protests want out. And it's been the pattern here, like whoever is in power, like we had in Brazil in 2013, the left in power, and then the right wanted to remove it. It was against all the system that was in place, and it was not attending the demands that people were demanding. So I think it's a general thing. Like, there's usually a small trigger, but it's a trigger that gets a lot of people together to complain about the whole system.
We're getting a call from Switzerland, so let's talk to Mari in Switzerland. Where in Switzerland, Mari? Hi from New York.
I'm just outside of Bern, Switzerland, and mm-hmm. I'm calling because a few weeks ago, my daughter and I marched in a climate strike in Bern, Switzerland. That was the culmination of a whole week of climate strikes throughout the country. The city officials had expected 25,000 people, and they got over 100,000. It was an extraordinary experience. And I will also say, typically Swiss, I was in town 18 hours later, and there was not a scrap of litter to be seen anywhere. It was amazing.
So do you think this was purely focused on climate, or was it also an expression of frustration with inequality of any kind?
Well, this particular protest was purely focused on climate, but it was the week before a nationwide election, mm-hmm. and the Green Party and a very left liberal party won an unprecedented number of seats in the nationwide elections. So even though the protest was specifically targeted at climate change, it had a much more wide political effect.
Mari, thank you so much for checking in from over there. Kim in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kim.
Hi there. Yes, I work with the Haiti Liberté newspaper, and we have an office in Brooklyn as well as one in Port-au-Prince, and are covering the uprisings in Haiti. The threat, I think, and you mentioned it sort of before, is the same throughout, I think, Haiti, Chile, Ecuador, and on. It's a systemic problem. The neoliberal capitalist system worldwide has so debilitated economies and made people's lives hell that they're fed up. And I think that symptoms of Trump and Macri and Bolsonaro, these the right-wing fascist dictators, as well as the emerging street protests, are all linked to the problems that this mm-hmm. system is confronting internationally.
Kim, thank you very much. And just to acknowledge, certainly Trump and Bolsonaro would dispute the characterization of them as fascist dictators, but just saying. James in Butler, New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hi, James.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Okay. Liberia has been marred by protests for the past 3 months, and the latest was last two weeks ago when students took to the streets because teachers have not been paid for the past 6 months. And earlier, there were protests over the disappearance of billions of dollars that were coming into the country, and the container got missing, so the entire nation got to the streets, and they have been protesting periodically. The nurses were on strike. They have not been paid. So the newly elected president, who is a former soccer star, seems not to be able to handle the situation in Liberia.
James, do you think in Liberia this is kind of a short-term situation, or is this the culmination of something that's been building for many, many years?
Yes, it's a combination of things I've been building over the years, and at this time, people feel that the time has come for them to come out and actually show. In fact, we heard there's a big protest being planned for December, and people are kind of on the edge because, you know, Liberia came from a civil war, and United Nations troops were there, and they are all out. So people are really on the edge now in Liberia.
James, thank you. Sam in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sam.
Yes, talk about India, the most miserable place ever. You have this Modi guy just returned from Bangkok, and he gives out 5 million masks for air that you can't breathe in New Delhi. That's so terrible. That's equivalent to smoking for 50 cigarettes a day. And then you have this character called Joker in all these protests, which is of have and have not.
Sam, thank you so much. So we've taken calls in the last few minutes from or describing Switzerland, Haiti, Liberia, India, Cal Perry, NBC News International correspondent, literally all over the world, every continent. We can hear it on our phones as well as in your reporting as you travel the world. I'm curious, because you've been focused on the Middle East recently, whether this is somehow the suppression of the Arab Spring, which started in 2011 and, of course, got suppressed in almost every country, rising up in another way today.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely sort of what's happening. And a region that's been war-ravaged. I mean, we have to sort of look at it through that lens, I think, as well. And we have to see ourselves in all of these places. I mean, in all of those calls, you could hear a little bit of what it is that we're living through here in America. And the president has done a masterful job. He's a magician at making people look over here instead of where they may want to look. And when these Democratic candidates come out and they talk about rising teacher pay, or they talk about health care, or they talk about the environment, he's able to strike real fear into people about our economic system, and he's able to steer the conversation in that direction. And when you look at what's happening around the world, that's what governments are trying to do.
And so, Luciani, in Chile, do they see the United States as causing this to any degree, or are we talking about a global movement that's mostly focused on their local governments, in the case of Chile that you're reporting on or elsewhere that you're familiar with?
I think in Chile, and mostly Chile, it's more like a local problem. It's a government. It's a constitution that was created during the dictatorship, so it was not like people had the right to give their opinion. And now, what's happening over this past couple of days, people are getting together in like cabildos, which is like similar to town halls, to discuss what they want to change with a new constitution. So I think it's a more of a local problem. Of course, it has to do with international economy, with the models that are there available. Chile has a more liberal economy, and Argentina has just chose to go back to Peronism, to a more closed to a left-wing government. So I think it's a lot to do with the way things are going in the countries, and of course it relates to the rest. But this protests are more about what people are getting their rights, what rights they're getting, the societies they live in.
How about the role of social media in the Chilean example, either encouraging the protest or being used to stamp out dissent?
I think it probably helped a lot from what we've seen and experienced on the ground. There was a lot of like a WhatsApp invitation for the protest. It was people sharing the times and places together. As there's no clear leadership, it had a lot to do with mass distribution of the message. You know, let's meet at Plaza Baquedano at 5 today and keep on protesting.
There was attacks on WhatsApp called, right? Calls. That was one of the triggers?
In Lebanon.
Oh, in Lebanon.
In Lebanon, yeah. That was sort of the equivalent of like the subway hike fare, where it's sort of the straw that broke the camel's back, a tiny little tax on WhatsApp. And interestingly enough, in Iraq and in Lebanon, WhatsApp has stayed up when the government's been able to turn the internet off. And in Iraq, Snapchat was able to stay up, and that's how people communicated for these protests.
Huh. And the same question I just asked Luciani about people in Chile viewing the United States one way or another, or is the United States irrelevant in this case? You know, I think Americans are surprised when they hear about protests in the Middle East that aren't about Israel and aren't about America.
Yeah, no, I think this is specifically about America. I mean, the U.S. just took its aid back from the Lebanese army. And if you're obviously talking about Iraq, you're talking about the U.S. involvement. And people will say there, look, the U.S. State Department, and we hear a lot about this in this country, the State Department and the Foreign Service has been in many ways gutted by the U.S. president. So we don't have the same kind of presence that we used to have in these countries. And look, the U.S. has always been a player in the Middle East until very recently, and a lot of that ground has been ceded, of course, to Russia and to China.
But they want American—you're saying populist protests in places like Iraq, where, you know, we don't have to even go into what the 2003 Iraq War started there and caused there so much death and destruction, but now— they're protesting too little American involved?
Well, what they see in America is a U.S. president who said we should be there for the oil. And they see pictures of U.S. troops in Syria guarding oil fields. And this is a natural resource for people there. In Lebanon, you know, the U.S. aid was a stabilizing force for the Lebanese army. That's been removed because of a perceived sort of Iranian shift of power. So I think the Middle East is particularly sort of acutely aware of U.S. involvement because we were just there. I mean, the U.S. Involvement in occupation of Iraq just wasn't that long ago for people there.
And there we will have to leave it with NBC News international correspondent Cal Perry and BBC News South America producer Luciani Gomez. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.